Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast.
I like doing it. You know, I love running routes.
We better be in Florida. It better be sunny. And there better be some sort of fruity drink involved.
With Matt Harmon.
It seems like you know ball the way you talk, so.
Thank you. Someone clip that.
Looking forward to facing your mom at some point.
Last night at the bar we were at, I had some really bad queso.
I've never had no bad queso, really.
It's Friday, August 26th, and oh my God, we're mere hours away from the final weekend of preseason action. Thank God. As awesome as it is to see some of these preseason games, especially see some of the rookies, I'm ready to get close to the real thing here, and we are very, very close to the real thing. And joining me today to discuss a whole bunch of news, rumors, whispers, and analysis from a various collection of beat reporters that we found is the great, the one and only Frank Schwab. Frank, what's going on, buddy? How's it going?
You know, I'm one of these guys who I get my football nerd card taken. I hate the preseason. Hate it. Hate everything about it. I'm not one of these, oh, it's really fun. No, just give me, if the NFL said tomorrow, hey, preseason's done for, we're never doing it again, I would be leading that ticker tape parade. So yes, let's get done with this preseason. No more injuries. My God, no more injuries. And then let's get to the season.
Well, unfortunately, we do have some injury news to discuss off the top of the show. And honestly, our news section is going to bleed kind of right into the meat of the show, which is these beat reports. But to start off with the current news, unfortunately, Cowboys left tackle Tyron Smith suffered an avulsion fracture in his knee and will be out until at least December. Not great news. Sort of kind of maybe decent news, though, is that Jerry Jones indicated Michael Gallup, who, of course, we know is going to miss week one, did avoid the reserve PUP list. So maybe he comes back a little early in the season. But, man, Frank, the Cowboys have an awful lot of negativity surrounding them from a health perspective, right? I mean, and this Tyron Smith one really couldn't afford this one.
It's rare where an offensive lineman kind of changes the whole outlook on a team. But you look at, he's one of the elite left tackles when he plays. Still, even I think he's age 32 now. One of the greats. And to take him out of the lineup, I'm just assuming all season. Yeah, maybe he comes back in December. But it's hard to say that'll happen for sure. It changes the outlook on the Cowboys for me. Look, I had Cowboys way too high in my power rankings. Everybody told me that. Even Cowboys fans were like,
how did you have them again?
I had them five.
Yeah.
They were really good last year, Matt. They were great. Yeah. They were a really, really good team last year. Anyway, you lose Lyle Collins. You lose Connor Williams. You lose Tyron Smith. All of a sudden, it's like, all right. Like, this is critical mass at this point. They don't really have anybody to replace him. You know, Dwayne Brown just went off the market to the Jets. They kind of snuck in front of the line there when their tackle, Mekhi Becton, went down. So I don't know who the Cowboys get to reasonably replace him. They'd already had kind of replacements along the line to replace the other two starters that left or were traded away or signed elsewhere this offseason. This is bad. This is a really, really bad injury for the Cowboys. If you were to ask, I mean, obviously like Dak would have been number one and probably like CeeDee Lamb number two. Micah Parsons maybe number three, but if you were like, who's the guy the Cowboys cannot afford to lose, Tyron Smith would have been way up there just because they lost so much else on the line.
And unfortunately, he was a guy that you could probably count on to miss some time, right, at least, because he's missed a lot of time. And you mentioned that they lose Lyle Collins. They released Lyle Collins, right? It wasn't as if
they traded him for nothing. Yeah, if I remember right. Like, that was one of those, just take him off our hands for not even that much sap. I didn't understand that move. They didn't get that much cap back. And again, it goes
They're sitting on a ton of cap room right now. And it's like they did like Lyle Collins. They let him go. And Amari Cooper, they let go, which at the time it was like, okay, I totally understand it. But they did end up just giving him away for a fifth round pick. And then the receiver market, you know, proceeded to explode. So not a great offseason for the Dallas Cowboys.
Not at all. And now, you know, I'm full steam ahead on Go Eagles or Fly Eagles Fly for this NFC's title. I think that if you can still go get that, if the Cowboys are still favored in that market, go take the Eagles, because I think Eagles are the best team. It's hard for me to just be like, yeah, left tackle changes my mind that much, but this one is a really, really bad injury for them.
I don't know if I'm going to adjust any fantasy rankings based on this. It might give me a little bit of pause. Like I have Javonte Williams and Ezekiel Elliott in the same tier. Maybe I break ties now in favor of Javonte Williams, just something like that. But I wouldn't bump Zeke down.
You know, Matt, the guy I looked at was Pollard. I mean, because Pollard's already a guy who, you know, everybody knows reasons we like him and all that kind of stuff. But now it's like, okay, that standalone value he has, that you chip away on that, all of a sudden, is he as valuable of a commodity? I'm still probably going to take that plunge a few times just because the upside is so great if Zeke goes down or anything. But, man, I think everybody in the Cowboys offense takes a little bit of a step back. I mean, whether it's, like you said, just breaking ties, whether it's, okay, maybe I'll bump up Mike Evans ahead of CD or whatever it's going to be at the end of the day. Yeah, it does affect it, because this offensive line might end up being probably bottom half of the league.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. You know, Jerry Jones was on First Take today and said, you know, quote, "It's still a fact. We go as Zeke goes." And of course,
what is he talking about? Like, in the year 2022? Yeah. Like, what are we doing, Jerry?
I mean, you know, really, Frank, it's like, who gives a fuck what Jerry says? I know he's like a very influential figure here, but and obviously that's what Twitter ran with, you know, because everybody wants to dunk on the Cowboys for the Zeke contract, admittedly probably deserved. But I actually thought the second part of the quote where he talked about, you know, he said, quote, the guy they're going to use beside him, Tony Pollard, you know, where they're going to try to figure out ways to make the defense stress about both these guys. I actually thought that was the more interesting part of the quote, because I think they're going to, I agree with you that it is maybe a little hesitant on the, like, I had Pollard and Ramondre Stevenson back-to-back in rankings. Again, maybe break that tie in favor of Stevenson, but I do think that they have to get Pollard involved, like, especially as an outlet receiver, if the line's not going to be as good. I think his pass-catching value is what really has me attracted to Pollard this year.
But tell me this. I mean, we talk about this so often, right? Oh, we're going to play both backs. This guy, like, when has it ever really happened? Like, truly, like, if you can give me a great example, I'm all ears, because I always hear this in August, right? We're going to use both backs. We're going to stress the defense. We're going to use the which NFL team has consistently used kind of a two running back look? I can't think of any off the top of my head. Yeah, gadget plays here and there. Okay, right. That's great. That's not going to bump up Tony Pollard's snap count to 60%. I mean, that's getting him on the field once or twice a game, maybe, extra role. But I just don't think – nobody pulls this off. Nobody actually follows through with this, and I doubt that the Cowboys will too.
I would say the most recent example to me for this type of thing is Austin Ekeler and Melvin Gordon at the beginning of Austin Eckler's career.
Yeah.
Like, before he fully – and that one holdout season, obviously, Eckler was a smash pick, or he went and even had some standalone value once Gordon got back. But, you know, those guys, from a yards per scrimmage perspective in 2018, 1,375 yards from scrimmage and 14 total touchdowns for Melvin Gordon, 958 yards from scrimmage, 6 touchdowns for Austin Eckler. And I think that's, you know, pretty decent for those two guys. And I think that's kind of the role I have envisioned for Zeke and Pollard, Zeke being the Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler being the Tony Pollard. And that was, by the way, in 12 games for Melvin Gordon, 14 games for Austin Eckler. So, I think that's probably the best example.
I just don't think they play together. I just don't see them being on the field at the same time. And because that would be great. Like, if we could be like, wow, Tony Pollard's going to be their slot, and it's going to go Tolbert, Lamb, and then, you know, they'll work back Gallup when he gets – I don't know. I'll see it when I believe it.
Yeah, that rarely happens. You're right about that. Little concerning news out of Las Vegas. Raiders coach Josh McDaniels doesn't, quote, feel comfortable making a prediction on Darren Waller's hamstring status for Week 1 against the Chargers. I mean, I think the fact that Waller's basically done nothing during training camp has been kind of underreported. Frank, does this have you make a pause about his draft stock this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in a draft right now, slow draft, where Waller just kept dropping and dropping and dropping, and all of a sudden you got to make that decision. Like, am I sure here? Because not just the added target competition with Devontae, and they kind of unlocked something with Renfro last year, and Waller was banged up. You're dealing with, okay, this guy's probably not going to practice pretty much at all before week one. That's not easy. And I get Josh McDaniels, and smartly so. Often I get cynical about coaches being sly about injuries. But in this case, be as sly as you want. You know, you don't got to put together that injury report until Wednesday, September 7th or whenever that is. So you can keep the Chargers guessing a little bit. So maybe he's playing some games here, but it is troubling. It is absolutely troubling to me. I haven't really been in on that Kittle Waller train that much.
Me neither.
Just because if I don't get one of the top guys, I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting a really long time. Maybe Hockenson in the middle somewhere there. So I wasn't even really in on Waller yet, but the fact that this news is going to come out, people are going to start hearing it before their drafts. Waller's stock will drop and he'll be available a little bit later than you think he will. Now you got to make a decision, and I'm not comfortable. I guess at some point you force my hand, I got to take Waller, but I don't want to proactively draft him. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. My tight end rankings, I had a first tier of Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, then a second tier of Kyle Pitts, Darren Waller.
Sure. And I put Pitts in the top tier. So there's a little bit of disconnect there.
Yeah. I guess I don't have the stones to do it just yet, but I think you're probably right though. Like I don't mind taking, maybe I just need to dissolve my second tier of tight ends and make those three the top, and then bring Waller down to the tier with Kittle, Schultz, Goddard, Knox, Hockenson. And I still think that Waller has the best path to a ceiling among all those guys. Like I don't want to take George Kittle over Darren Waller.
Kittle, it's hard to do the, we talked about doing the math on guys, and all of a sudden it's hard to do the math with the 49ers. It's like, well, if Ayuk is going to be great, if Samuel's going to be great, if we don't think Trey Lance is going to throw the ball 35 times a game, 40 times a game, well, where does Kittle's catches come from? I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, but Dalton and I just talked about that in the last episode. It seems like that's the tough thing to admit, because Kittle's such a badass. But
great player.
Yeah, yeah. All right. ESPN's Rich Cimini writes that Michael Carter is, quote, still RB1 for the Jets. This whole Michael Carter thing, I think he was underrated coming into the preseason. I think he was like a really good pick, you know, after the top 30 running backs, because Michael Carter's a pretty good player, right? Like, they obviously drafted Breece Hall. We expect, and I still think, by the way, Breece Hall finishes the year with more carries, more touches, more yards than Michael Carter. But I think Carter has some, you know, not like you, if you have to start Michael Carter, your fantasy team's probably in a little bit of trouble, unless Breece Hall is injured. But I do think he has some standalone value as an emergency, to use the old football guy's term, what the heck flex. I think he's got some value there. And also, obviously, he's got great contingency value if something ever happens to Breece Hall. But have you moved off Breece Hall at all? Have you moved up Michael Carter in reaction to kind of, I mean, he's been running as the legit RB1 in the preseason.
Yeah, I'm kind of off both of them, just bad offense. So I don't think I have one Breece Hall share. I don't think I have even a Michael Carter share, even though he's almost free. He's sneaking up a little bit now, but I just don't see a path really for Michael Carter unless he gets hurt. And it's always one of these things too, where we talk about, and you're right, there's a contingency plan. If Breece Hall goes down and Michael Carter's the guy. But let's say Breece Hall retired from football today. Where'd Michael Carter go in the draft? Like fourth round? Like he's still...
Good question.
He's not a bell cow. He's not a great... He's good in a really bad offense with offensive line issues. I just don't love... I'd rather take Khalil Herbert in that range, because he doesn't have the standalone value that Carter does necessarily, but I think
maybe
Carter's standalone value is like, it's like you said, it's a what the heck flex. It's not great. You're not going to feel comfortable starting him. You're hoping for an injury. And if I'm hoping for an injury anyway, I might as well go with a more higher upside guy. Like, I think anyway, Herbert has a higher upside than Carter, even though that's a bad offense too.
We'll talk about Khalil Herbert in our next section here. So save my thoughts on that. But I have Breece Hall at running back 22 in that huge RB tier 5 of dead zone guys that I really don't want you. I honestly don't want you to draft running backs in this range anyways. And I think Michael Carter would move into, I think you're right, he'd probably be maybe a low 4, high 5 round pick. I think that's always a good way. Whereas we just talked about Tony Pollard. If Zeke went down, I think Pollard would be like a second round pick, and I'd be probably
a high second. Yeah, he'd be, you know, it'd be like Javonte Williams, get out of here. Tony Pollard's going to that spot.
Yeah, exactly.
He'd be, and the same with AJ Dillon. AJ Dillon's another guy who's really, his price is getting out of control in some of the drafts I've had. But Yeah, if he goes down, it's not just, oh, I have a starting running back. Oh, it's, oh, I have a RB1 right now. So there's a big difference there.
I was listening to the Athletic Football Show yesterday while driving home. I did a guest spot with the Around the NFL podcast for their Fantasy Extravaganza. Go check it out. Great show. Love it. And I was driving home listening to that podcast, and Robert Mays said that they're going to push the limits of how much you can have two running backs on the field in the year 2022. And I know we just talked about that, but in terms of the Green Bay Packers, like AJ Dillon, I think they're going to try to get on the field a lot with Aaron Jones. And I'm super, super high on Aaron Jones as a first round pick this year, like a late first round pick.
Really? You got him all the way late first.
I think they're going
to have him above Swift then. You'd have to have him above DeAndre Swift.
I have him above DeAndre
Swift. Above Mixon?
I got him above Joe Mixon. I go back and forth at RB6 between him and Najee Harris all the time. I know that is a hot take about Aaron Jones.
No, but you got to be bold, man. I like it. I like the conviction.
I think he can legitimately catch 80 plus passes this year, Aaron Jones. I think he's going to be schemed into a lot of I think what gets lost about the Packers is, yeah, they kind of run Shanahan McVay style offense there with Matt LaFleur, but they do a lot of creative stuff. They did a lot of creative stuff with Davante Adams in terms of just getting him the ball right away on screens, on like leak routes, stuff like that. I think they'll do a ton of that with Aaron Jones this year. He's just like, I guess and this has been said before, but the logic from the coaching staff is these two guys, Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon, are among our best 11 players on offense. And it would be kind of stupid to minimize one or the other. And I know that sounds a little weird that I'm like, no, Dillon's going to have legit value, but Aaron Jones is still a first round pick. I just think Aaron Jones is going to score a ton of touchdowns. He's going to catch 80 plus balls. And he's the most trusted receiving asset, I think, on the Green Bay Packers roster. And by the way, they do still have the two-time reigning MVP there. So I'm pretty high on Jones.
Anybody in that Aaron Rodgers off. That's why we talked about Lazard a little bit last time we got together. And it's like, I do believe you that Aaron Jones probably leads them in receptions this year. But if anybody in that offense, it's going to get run. I mean, you got to take a look because it's Aaron Rodgers and he's going to rise everybody to his level.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why we're still on the Romeo Doubs excitement train. But all right, let's move into the meat of the show here. Speaking of the Athletic, we're going to go through two kind of I think, honestly, Frank, and we've already started doing it here in the news section. We can just call this episode like the fantasy gossip episode because I wanted to dig into these two articles, one from The Athletic, one from ESPN. The Athletic's article was all 32 NFL teams' most impactful developments in terms of fantasy football from training camp. So I picked out a few that really stuck out to me. This first one, you know, we just talked about preseason. One of the stories of preseason has been a rookie tight end out of Baltimore. Quote, one revelation this summer was rookie tight end Isaiah Likely, who quickly emerged as a popular target for Lamar Jackson. That was from Jeff Zriebeck, who covers the Ravens for The Athletic. Isaiah Likely is a guy who fell in the draft because he had bad workout measurables, but, you know, was a good college player. People liked him before I mean, he just cratered because of those athletic measurables. I mean, rookie tight ends, not usually a position you want to invest in, but Likely's looked, I mean, he's looked awesome in the preseason, and Baltimore needs pass catching guys beyond Mark Andrews and Rashad Bateman.
I honestly don't see it. I don't see a path to value.
Yeah.
You'd have to tell me where you're drafting him. Like Dynasty, go nuts. Yeah. I think he's got a future ahead of him. Whenever Mark Andrews kind of moves on or whatever. Yes. Okay. I get that. But you're talking about a second tight end, a rookie tight end, in a low volume passing offense. Are you drafting him ahead of Robert Tonyan? Like,
no,
are you drafting him
no.
ahead of Irv Smith? Like, so we're talking about like what you're drafting him as the 24th tight end off the.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tight end 28, right? Right.
Like, if
yeah.
Mark Andrews gets hurt, you got a smash tight end one on your roster, and it's rare to talk about like. You know, kind of handcuffed tight ends. Like sure. we're gonna stash Isaiah Likely and hope that he becomes like an injury like god in the second half of the season. Could happen. I'm not gonna waste a roster spot on it unless we're talking about really deep benches, best ball, something like that. I get it. I just don't think this is actionable. He's a good player. Probably gonna help the Ravens in real life. Probably not gonna help anybody in fantasy.
The only thing I'd say is the one actionable takeaway I have from this, because I agree with you. I mean, don't be out there drafting Isaiah Likely. You definitely keep his name on the radar, waiver wire, speed dial, or something like
if
that.
If Mark Andrews goes down, you're fabbing a ton of money on him,
100%, because tight end is just a really tough position. The one actionable thing I did come away from this is, like, if he's going to have a legit role, like, we probably already should have been in forget about it territory with, like, Devin Duvernay or James Prochet or any of these other wide receivers. But, like, that has officially closed the door on giving a damn about any of those guys in fantasy in any way. But let's move on to a more fun one here. I'm not sure if we've talked about Isaiah McKenzie yet. You and I have, Frank, but I have with a few of the other guys on the show. Isaiah McKenzie has outperformed Jamison Crowder, and McKenzie has positioned himself to work with Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs, and Gabriel Davis to begin the season. That comes from Joe Buscaglia, who covers the Bills for The Athletic. I love Isaiah McKenzie. I think he is legitimately a good player. I want to do an episode at some point with this podcast about, like, teammates who could outscore their guys drafted ahead of them. It's a hot take because Gabriel Davis is going to score a shit ton of touchdowns this year, I think. But I mean, Isaiah McKenzie, like, he would be a prime candidate for that episode. I love taking him in the late rounds. I still think he's undervalued.
It could be a PPR monster. They're going to want to pass the ball a ton. And I think about, when I think about McKenzie, I think about the run Beasley went on. I think it was 2019. You can go back and look.
I think it's 2020. It was 2020.
Was it 2020? Yeah.
That was when Peter King, like, voted him as an All-Pro that year, right?
Right. Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. oh boy. Anyway, the Beasley was a dude. Like, if you were starting Beasley every week, you were excited to start Cole Beasley. Why can't Isaiah McKenzie be that? Their passing offense is better now. And I get it. There's more target competition because now Gabe Davis is in the mix. But when you look at, they're going to pass a ton. Look at that. Everybody talks about the Patriots game, which is very valid. He dominated in that game. He's going to have games like that. He's more a guy I want in best ball because you don't have to make a decision. You don't have to, okay, this is a McKenzie week. He's going to catch 10 balls. Because I think he's going to fluctuate a lot based on that. But I can see exactly what you mean. We're talking about, could he outscore Gabe Davis? Yeah, if the touchdown luck doesn't hit Gabe Davis, if he has a down year touchdown-wise, I think Isaiah McKenzie has more receptions. I mean, why not? He's a slot guy. He's going to get the layup targets. He's going to produce pretty well. And he's going to have some spike weeks. And I don't know that I necessarily want to predict those all the time. But he's a very good player. Great offense. The price tag is rising, but it's still not that bad. Yeah, Isaiah McKenzie's a guy everybody should have on at least their bench. And heck, even if you're in a deeper league, running back heavy build, you pay for a vanity tight end. He might even be a starter for you. He might be a flex.
107 targets, 82 catches, 967 yards and 4 touchdowns for Cole Beasley in 2020. He had 3 straight years of 100 plus targets, Cole Beasley, in that slot.
And he was ball. I mean, there was a few, he ended up, I don't remember where he, like, his exact finish, his really big year, but he was legitimately an every week starter.
Yeah, I don't know that McKenzie's going to do that just because Gabe Davis, I think, will be better than, like, Manny Sanders was last year as the pure, like, outside number two receiver. And, you know, John Brown was banged up in 2020. That was a part of why Cole Beasley had that rise. So, but still, if case something goes wrong, it's always a good guy to have on. Yeah, the ceiling is absolutely.
And that's the thing, too. We need to McKenzie from what everybody's talked about with the snap counts and all that. If something happens to Davis or Diggs, McKenzie's in the two receiver set. Like,
exactly,
he's not
that's
coming
huge.
Off the field. He's going to be there. Basically, he's locked in. He's locked in for playing time, whether it's as a number three or if he has to move up as number two, if there's an injury ahead of him.
And that's what elevated Cole Beasley, was that he ended up, because John Brown was hurt and they didn't trust Gabe Davis yet as a rookie. Beasley was playing as the flanker in two receiver sets along with Stephon Diggs. So that makes 100% sense there. Let's move on to the next one. We talked about Khalil Herbert earlier. This one comes in from Adam Johns. The issue for fantasy teams is that David Montgomery could be looking at similar stats to last year or potentially even worse. He's still the Bears' top back, but it's been apparent throughout training camp that Khalil Herbert will be getting carries as well. I've talked about this with, noted Bears homer Andy Behrens that, like, David Montgomery is just, I think one of the worst picks you can make in fantasy. Maybe that comes back to bite me, but I've got him – he's still like around a consensus top 20 back in some rankings and some ADP formats. And I've got him running back 27, and I've got Khalil Herbert as a guy that you should draft in the late rounds in case Montgomery gets hurt, or in case this pendulum swings more towards Herbert.
Right. And the thing is, Montgomery's time with the Bears coming to an end pretty soon. So maybe a new regime wants to kind of turn the page early and get Herbert some more. I don't believe this. I truly don't believe Herbert's going to get that many carries to make a difference. He's not going to be one of those A.J. Dillon, Tony Pollard types that has any standalone value without an injury. But if there is an injury, or like you said, they just decide, hey, let's let the young kid go nuts in the second half of the season because, you know, Montgomery's, you know, not going to be back next year, whatever it's going to be. Yeah, he's a guy, Khalil Herbert, I'm grabbing as many times as I can in drafts because his price tag is so low, but the upside is there. He's a good player. We saw that last year. Another guy. Look, I like betting on good players. I've seen this guy play. I know he can play. He's a very good running back. And if he does get that shot, even in a bad offense, he's going to be a viable starter for you.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, good player. I think he runs hard. He's aggressive. I mean, the Bears offense is probably going to stink. So we don't think two running backs are going to be relative. It's going to be so bad. Yeah. All right. This next one, maybe you completely shoot down because you really shot down that Isaiah Likely one, but I'm interested to hear how you react to this one. Hayden Hurst has received plenty of targets since Joe Burrow's return, and he was apparently getting a bunch of targets from the backups. That was also in the article as well. And with defenses hyper-focused on Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Tyler Boyd, the 2018 first-round pick could be in for the most productive season of his career. That comes in from Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Look, again, Frank, I'm only saying the Hayden Hurst thing because, like, once you get to tight end 10 in your rankings, you know, you're into murky territory.
Yeah.
And you're basically just looking for a guy who can, you know, maybe score you some cheap touchdowns. You can just completely shut me down on the Hayden Hurst thing. I'm totally open to that, by the way. Any reaction to this?
Yeah, I'm kind of, okay. He might be a good, valuable, real-life player, but I don't think, he might have a couple spike weeks. Was it Uzuma last year? He had a couple really big weeks, and that'll happen. Just because, like you said, like Jay was talking about in his report, you know, you're going to try to take away all these receivers, and there's going to be some seams available for the tight ends, but yeah, not a guy who I'm expecting a big year out of. I'd be shocked if he ended up being a reliable guy just because you got to do the math again.
Yeah.
Unless Joe Burrow's throwing 70 times a game, like these guys aren't all going to eat. It's impossible.
Yeah, I think he's just steps into CJ Uzama's role. And
yeah, that's fine. Like, he'll be a valuable real life guy.
And, you know, potential DFS weeks, you know, potential stuff like that. He's just, I feel like he's completely off the radar and, you know, it's just somebody to keep in the back of your mind for the waiver wire during the year. All right. This one's interesting because, you know, Colts head coach Frank Reich said it himself. If I was a fantasy owner, if I was going to be in a fantasy league, I think I'd pick Nyheim this year. Obviously, Nyheim Hines from James Boyd. You're already shaking your head, Frank. You know, there's been a lot of talk in fantasy circles about Nyheim Hines because, you know, Frank Reich has said this. He said, you know, you don't win with being a ground and pound team. Obviously, we expect Matt Ryan to elevate the quarterback position. Also, strangely enough, like Carson Wentz is, I don't know how you can be bad at throwing to running backs, but he's like the worst quarterback in the NFL at throwing to running backs. I think Matt Ryan will be better. So, Frank, if you want to shoot down this like weird Nyheim Hines cult in fantasy football Twitter, go for it, buddy.
Please, please. Because last year we did the same thing where it was like, well, Jonathan Taylor, he can't catch a ball. He went to Wisconsin. You know, hey, I got to get in my Wisconsin love here. Jonathan, when it comes down to it, when it's you are in the game, it's 20-17 against the Tennessee Titans. You ain't putting Nyheim Hines on the field. You have the best running back in football or one of the top five, whatever. You're giving the ball to Jonathan Taylor. We went through this last year. It forced me to push Taylor down too far in my rankings until late in the draft season.
I started
getting a little bit of him, and I was very happy with that. But there's some drafts I go back and look, and I say, I took that guy over Jonathan Taylor. Why? And I did it because all this nonsense about Nyheim Hines. Like, Nyheim Hines is going to have a role. He's going to be fine. I do not discount Jonathan Taylor in the slightest because of this. And maybe I'll just be dumb at the end of the day. Maybe I'm being a Wisconsin homer. I don't know. But to me, Jonathan Taylor is still easily number one for me overall. And I don't buy the Nyheim Hines stuff. He'll have some. He'll play some. He'll get his. But no running back is on the field 100% of the time. It's not Walter Payton 1984 anymore. Like, this is guys shuttle in and out. Taylor's going to get a ton of snaps. He'll even get catches because he's proven he can catch the ball. Jonathan Taylor's just fine. Nyheim Hines is... No, not doing it. Not falling for this trick again.
let me tell you what, most coaches probably don't know how fantasy scoring works. So, you know, like,
yeah,
when
I'm
a coach...
sure Frank Reich isn't like grinding it out. Yeah. He's probably not going to listen to this podcast, but if you do, Frank, hey, yeah. Great comeback against the Oilers. Yeah.
Yeah. Appreciate shout out Frank, of course, both Franks, Frank Schwab and Frank Reich. We love the Franks here. But I mean, he says, if I was going to be in a fantasy league, that leads me to think Frank Reich does not play fantasy football, does not know what it takes for Nyheim Hines to. And I think this is the thing, too. I've been on the show the last couple episodes talking about Alec Pierce potentially, you know, making an impact as a rookie. Paris Campbell, for now, is healthy. I like, you know, VCU's finest Mo'Ali Cox as a like sleeper tight end, probably more than I like Hayden Hurst, definitely more than I like Hayden Hurst and Isaiah Likely. If all that's going to happen, Nyheim Hines is not catching, like, he would probably have to catch 70 plus passes to be a relevant guy in fantasy. And I agree with you. That's not happening because Jonathan Taylor still last year, he didn't, you know, wasn't a huge receiver or anything, but he was much better than people expected. And he still ran a lot of routes. He just doesn't get a lot of targets. Cause like I said, Carson Wentz does not check down to the running back. Yeah. It's so bizarre, man.
Take JT number one. Let's stop the nonsense. Like this is, PNL was on Twitter talking about this. Like, there's something to be said. You don't need to hit a 500-foot grand slam. Maybe 400-foot grand slam is just fine. That's what Jonathan Taylor is. Don't get cute with your first pick. Take JT. I'm not moving off of him at all for any reason, honestly.
I'm in agreement with you there. I'm still very much team Jonathan Taylor first overall, pretty much regardless of format. Maybe in PPR, I think about one of those receivers, but still, I'm still Jonathan.
Yeah,
Taylor
I mean, if you're overall. If you're a zero running back guy, and I have issues with zero running back at times. If you go Cooper Kupp number one, all right, I guess I get it, but don't the McCaffrey stuff. Just I understand it in theory, but we can't act like the guy didn't miss 23 of 33 games the last 2 years. I get that there was no lingering injury. It's not an ACL, it's not an Achilles, whatever. But Christian McCaffrey did miss these games, and he had an unbelievable workload the years before that. Like, this did happen. Jonathan Taylor's never missed a practice going all the way back to high school. Like, if he gets hurt, he just gets hurt. Like, that can happen.
But, yeah, anyone can get hurt.
Yeah, don't. I get the theory behind McCaffrey over Taylor. Not in practice for me. I'm JT all day.
Yeah, I totally get it. And it's like I said on the episode with Evan Porras a couple of episodes ago, I understand the reality that McCaffrey, you know, hasn't had an injury that, like, we think is, oh, this is going to, he's got to come back from this, whatever. But if I do understand the emotional argument of, if you take Christian McCaffrey first overall over Jonathan Taylor and Christian McCaffrey gets hurt, you're going to feel like such a dumbass. And I don't really want to feel that way.
I don't think there's any, and in converse, let's say, is Christian McCaffrey ceiling 5% higher than Jonathan Taylor? Sure. Of course, his ceiling is higher, yeah. But it's not like, oh my God, he scored 10 more points per game to Jonathan Taylor. It's a few. And for me, the risk isn't worth it. I'll take 95% of Christian McCaffrey's ceiling with Jonathan Taylor, knowing that his health record is so, so much better.
All right. Frank and I are going to keep chipping away at some of these beat writer whispers when we come back right after this break. All right, Frank, we're back. I want to hit this one here that, because this is a piece of news that I feel like we actually didn't react to. This comes in from Vic Tafor, who covers the Raiders for The Athletic. We expected it to be a committee approach at running back, and Josh Jacobs playing the first two drives in the preseason game kind of confirms that. Rookie Zamir White is on the rise, while Amir Abdullah is beating out Kenyon Drake for third down touches. Obviously, since this was published, Drake was released, which is what Vic said the Raiders were going to do. I'm kind of interested to see where Kenyon Drake lands, because it was just such a weird signing by the John Gruden Mike Mayock. So weird. I kind of think that Amir Abdullah is going to have some decent, like, desperation PPR value this year, because I think he flashed a little bit as a pass catcher for the Panthers last year, just, like, wasn't obviously the situation to flash in. And maybe I'm only saying that because I have one dynasty league where I have Christian McCaffrey was, like, my only running back, and he got injured right away. I also had Gus Edwards got hurt, too. I was in dire straits, and I had to start Amir Abdullah in this, like, full PPR format in a couple. And, hey, guess who still almost made it to the championship game? That was me. So, yeah, I think that when you look at just this Raiders backfield, how are you handling these guys? Because, I mean, I don't really want to draft Josh Jacobs, and I'm at least interested in Zamir White as a late-round flyer.
Yeah, Jacobs is a stay away for me. I got a little bit of pushback when I said on Twitter that I think Josh Jacobs just isn't special, and I don't think he is, and I know the tape guys love him.
Andy Behrens, that's his favorite player in the NFL.
I know, and I respect the guys who say that, but it's just, he's a starting NFL running back. I don't think he's like cut him, he's trash, but the Raiders already declined his option. And he's not a guy I draft. I got other guys. I'm taking receivers in that part of the draft. So I'm totally out to Josh Jacobs. Again, if Zamir White is available late, yeah, I'll take a shot. Why not? If it's a deep bench, but mostly just Raiders. I'm just staying away. I think they're going to pass a ton. I think that they're going to have the Patriots-esque games at running back where you're just like, we don't know who it's going to be from week to week because that's Josh McDaniels' way. I don't think the offensive line is really good enough to support a good running back. Totally off Jacobs. If he ends up going having a 1,500-yard year, oh well, I'll take a loss on that.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. Not if White's involved. Not if Ameer Abdullah is involved as a pass catcher. It just is. He's classic running back dead zone, man. Just like take a receiver wherever Josh Jacobs is going. Take a receiver. Take a tight end. I don't even care if it is Darren Waller. Just go for it. All right, last one here from this Athletic piece. Quote, there are always questions about an acclimation period when a receiver changes teams, and there should be no such concerns with Brown in Philadelphia, A.J. Brown, of course. The Eagles are committed to manufacturing touches for Brown, especially those that give him the ball in the open field where Brown can run after the catch. This comes in from Zach Berman. Frank, I know we talk about making the math work, and it is a little tough to make the math work in Philadelphia, but the more I think about A.J. Brown and the constant drumbeat of, you know, they have been hammering him passes in training camp. Like Jalen Hurts is basically only throwing to A.J. Brown. And like, you can't just, if you're a opponent that's going, because I think we get carried away with like double coverage and double teams and stuff like that. It just doesn't happen as often.
Doesn't happen as often as you think. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I still think that teams that give you a lot to think about, that can be advantageous for a pass catcher in fantasy, because like, you walk into playing the Eagles, man, and just think about this for a second. You have to defend a mobile quarterback. That already means you've got to have eyes on Jalen Hurts at all times. We know their run game can be dangerous, even though we don't really want to draft any of these guys in fantasy. And like, A.J. Brown is a freaking monster. He'll just destroy you if you let him. But like, Devontae Smith is really good. Dallas Goedert is, and especially Smith is, I think we've kind of, I know I don't really want to draft him in fantasy either just because the math doesn't really work, but he's a great player. And Dallas Goedert is good. Frank, where is A.J. Brown ranked for you, and where would you feel comfortable taking him, or are you passing this year?
I have taken him a little bit in the third round when he's at the right price point and James Conner is not there, because James Conner is my third round guy just about every single time.
Oh, I love that.
Running back. So I've got a little bit of A.J. Brown. I think it's more all this drumbeat about A.J. Brown, it's leading me more to downgrade Devontae Smith, a little bit Dallas Goedert.
I agree.
Just because, again, you got to make the math work. They're not going to have Jalen Hurts throwing 40 times a game. It's just, that's not, I don't think that that's how they see themselves as an offense. Even if they want to play that way, they know who Jalen Hurts is. They know what he does well, and he's not Patrick Mahomes. He ain't dropping back that many times. So I think A.J. Brown is just fine. If you want to jump him up into the late second, I could see it. I understand it. We've been waiting for this. How many years in Tennessee were we saying, oh my goodness, if you could just get A.J. Brown 150 targets, he's going to go nuts. He might get 150 targets this year. But I like Brown. I think he's good. I haven't moved him much, but I will move Smith. I probably got it a little bit too, just because I don't think the volume is going to be there for him.
Let me tell you what, Frank, if A.J. Brown gets 150 targets, like, he's going to be a top five fantasy receiver, because I think he's legitimately that good.
I mean, they gave that guy $100 million. Like, they love him. Like, you don't just do that. You got to follow the money in the NFL and also the draft capital. You send a first round pick, you instantly give a guy $100 million. What more do you need to know? Like, they love A.J. Brown. He's going to be their alpha. There's no doubt about that. It's just, how high can he go? Does he stay healthy? That's always been an issue with him.
Always the
thing. Can Jalen Hurts consistently get him the ball? That's a question too. So there's some questions about A.J. Brown, but you're right. Top five ceiling? Absolutely.
Okay, I'm going to do a little this or that with you on A.J. Brown, just because I want to. I've been flipping him around in my rankings a lot, and I kind of want to figure this out. So let me tell me if you agree that every one of these guys should be ahead of A.J. Brown. Cooper Kupp, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Stephon Diggs, CeeDee Lamb, Mike Evans, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill. All these guys ahead of A.J. Brown?
I don't know about Hill.
About all right. Fair enough.
Hill's my guy. Hill. That's where I do. Yes. Evans, yes, because better quarterback. When I get to Hill, I'm like, Hill or A.J. Brown. That'd be a toss-up for me. I might just default to Hill. But I haven't proactively drafted Hill once, and I don't think I will, just because Tua. I'm sorry. Like, Tua's going to have to prove it to me. So I think that's my cutoff. It's the Tyreek Hill line, like the Mendoza line. Like,
well, that's like, that's the end of my wide receiver tier two. Tier three for me, I have these guys ahead of A.J. Brown. Michael Pittman, T. Higgins, Deebo Samuel, D.J. Moore, A.J. Brown. Would you have Brown ahead of all those guys?
Pretty close, yeah. I think it hurts me to say, but probably ahead of Deebo, just because the regression is coming from him. Pittman's an interesting case. Pittman's a really interesting case, but I probably have A.J. Brown ahead of him, too. I love Pittman. I think Pittman's a good player, but I think he's been a helium guy, and he's just getting away from me. He's one of those guys who, I guess, they're going into drafts, like, I like Michael Pittman, and I'm never going to draft him because he's
somebody
never
else always
point.
Likes him more. Yeah,
yeah. Somebody else always likes him a little bit more than I do, or I'm drafting another position or something like that. So I might have AJ. Yeah, I'd probably have AJ Brown at the top of that tier. I really would. I mean, because just we've seen the talent, the upside's there, the opportunity's probably going to be there. Yeah, there. Yes, yeah, sometimes we get to a situation where team receivers changing teams doesn't work as great as we think it, and maybe that happens here. But maybe Stephon Diggs. Like, they want this to happen. They want to look smart. They probably see A.J. Brown as the key to unlocking a different offense for them. They do. I don't think Sirianni wants to play how they played in the second half last year. It was very smart. Neither. It was very.
Well, they didn't play that way at all in the first half. So that's
not at
that's
all.
The proof
they were forcing
there.
Passes. I mean, they had a game, if I'm not mistaken, it was like the first end of the first half, they had like two rushes or something like that. It was something crazy.
Yes. Yeah, you're
and
right.
And I can't remember which game it was. I had to go back and look. But they were very. And then Nick Sirianni said, we can't win this way. We're not built the way. And I give him all the respect in the world for changing. But I think if you sat Nick Sirianni down and say, how do you want to play football? He would not want to play. He would not want to have the number one rushing offense in the NFL. He wants to pass it more. And A.J. Brown's a guy to unlock that. So everything lines up for A.J. Brown just fine for me. And I'm totally fine having him against over pretty much everybody you named in your wide receiver two tier.
Yeah. And when you look at Jalen Hurts, like his yards per attempt or adjusted yards per attempt has gone up from his time at Alabama to his time at Oklahoma, his first year in the NFL, and then his second year in the NFL, a jump from all of those. So, like, he's gotten better every single year. And let me tell you what, you know what'll make you look better, Frank, is taking Jalen Reagor's targets and giving them to A.J. Brown. So that'll make
you look
a little
better. Really?
That'll make
you
look a little better. All right, that's all from that athletic piece. A couple of ones I want to hit on from ESPN. One I'm going to use to lead into our Rams preview. But when we talked about the Green Bay Packers one, Rob Domofsky wrote that the team expects both Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon to join the 50-catch club. So that's interesting. We already talked about those guys. The only one I want to hit on here before we jump to our team previews, the Broncos running back situation will be convoluted, at least in some way, for as long as both Williams and Gordon are healthy. Yes, Williams is expected to be the team's primary runner, but whether that's 20 more carries than Gordon this year or 100 more carries is unknown at the moment. And anyone who says it is hasn't been to practice. That's from Jeff Legwold, who's covered the team forever. Man, where... I think that Melvin Gordon's a fine pick where he's going, but the key line in this report to me, Frank, is that whether it's 20 more carries or 100 more carries is unknown at the moment, because I kind of think how this, you tell me if I'm wrong, I kind of think how this rotation goes is all up to Javonte Williams. Like, if Javonte Williams comes in there and balls out, like in the first 3 weeks, I think they just kind of ride him, and then he's going to end up being an RB1 in fantasy, even though Gordon will still mix in because Gordon's a good player. But if Javonte Williams doesn't get off to a great start, I think that opens the door for Melvin Gordon to be more involved going forward.
Yeah, and I've kind of pendulum swung on Javonte, where I was saying, I don't know, he might just get... Melvin Gordon was a good player last year. There's no doubt. Like, you look at the metrics, and Melvin Gordon was... You know, he was 98% of what Javonte Williams was, really. Like, he was really good last year. It's not like he's just a guy. Like, he's not Zeke, who was just dragging his leg along. Like, Melvin Gordon was a good player last year. So, but as it's gone on, and I hate to take one piece of information and overreact to it, but Melvin Gordon standing up at the podium and saying, well, they want Javonte to be the guy, and I'm just going to keep trying to get on the field. Like, you don't say that as a veteran. What reason would you have to say that unless it's true? I think Javonte, where he's going, usually kind of mid to late second. I even saw him slip to a third in one of the drafts I'm having now. Even if he's just what we think he probably will be in this rotation, I think that's just fine value. I think he's got a lot of touchdown upside. He can push the ball. He's good all around back with the upside of, hey, if he does take over this backfield and is 75%, all of a sudden he's a first round pick.
Dalton made the point on the last podcast that if you're say your employer, we don't wish this on you, Frank, and we don't wish this on anyone, but say your employer cut your salary. Well, if you listen, actually, maybe I do wish this on you. And Dalton said, if your employer cut your salary from $8 million to $2 million, wouldn't you expect a role decrease? I think, Frank, we'd both probably take $2 million.
I think so. Yeah.
I guess.
Maybe Charles, our coworker Charles Robinson couldn't take that kind of pay cut.
No, yeah. Well, he's in that $8 million club for sure. But so that's one interesting point I agree about the Melvin Gordon part of this from Dalton. And just to my point about, hey, if Javonte gets off to a hot start, their first two games, the Broncos, Seahawks, Texans, like he could smash in those two games.
Yeah, and pick that Broncos defense if you stream in those first 2 weeks.
Oof. Right. 100%. Those are two juicy matches. Get the 49ers in week 3. That's a nasty defense, but Javonte could get off to a hot start and then we're not really having this.
And then he's this year's Jonathan Taylor, where we just said, there's a realistic scenario where we get to October. And I hate that I'm talking myself into this because I remember sitting down with Liz earlier this offseason and saying, I'm not going to do this again. I'm not going to, if guys are splitting, it's so hard. But as I sit here, there is a realistic scenario where we're sitting here in October saying, why were we downgrading Javonte Williams? Like all the signs were there that he was just going to be the guy and take over this backfield and have an unbelievable year.
Yeah, I really want. You're making me really want to revisit my running back rankings now too. It's like I'm scratching off answers right before we got to turn in the test here. All right, let's move into our team previews, and I'm going to use one of these nugs from the ESPN article to transition us into the Rams. Sarah Barshop says, "I don't think it's a given that Cam Akers will start the season as the Rams' true RB1." Both coach Sean McVay and offensive coordinator Liam Cohen have said the team plans to use both Akers and Henderson regularly. We'll talk full Rams here, but let's start with Cam Akers. Frank, I think Cam Akers is, I think he's firmly in the running back dead zone. I can 100% see. I'm drafting and ranking as if the negative range of outcomes here is going to be the reality that there'll be a split between Henderson and Akers. We have questions about Akers as Edwin Porras brought this up on our podcast about his, you know, just long-term viability coming back from the Achilles, all that stuff wasn't effective last year when we saw him. A lot of questions about Akers individually, and there's these committee concerns. But at the same time, he is a running back on the Rams offense. Like, he could make me look stupid for thinking this, but I'm very curious where you're at with Cam Akers as all these reports have circled.
It's still a total stay away for me. And I, you know, like we talked about last time, I'm willing to take the L on guys. You got to take a stance. You can't draft everybody. You can't like everybody. You have to pick lanes. And with my lane is the Achilles history is so strong. Look, I'm rooting for Cam Akers. I hope he comes back. I great conversation with him, the Super Bowl road story about his comeback, all that kind of stuff. A good player, fun to watch that rookie year. But the Achilles history is so strong. I just can't do it where he's going. I can't get into it. I know the Rams, and I know they say they want to use both, and that might be true, but they usually like one guy. Like, McVay is pretty much a bell cow workhorse guy. And I think if Akers was healthy and fully back to what he was his rookie year, that would be his role, and we wouldn't see much of Daryl Henderson. But I can't get there with Akers. And so I have taken Daryl Henderson late just because what if Akers gets hurt? I think Daryl Henderson would have a great role as long as he's healthy. I mean, he hasn't been able to stay healthy either.
No, yeah, but he's always
Akers is a Akers is a guy who will own 0% of this year. I can't get there with him. And look, he's one of those guys. If he's healthy, rushes for, you know, 1,200, 1,300 yards, is the bell cow there. Okay, I just take the loss, and he's the first guy ever to have that kind of return from Achilles surgery.
Yeah, and I think you're right to say that Sean McVay likes to have one back, but ever since Todd Gurley, where he was the one back, it's kind of been like, and even when Gurley started to decline, it was, you know, C.J. Anderson, you know, kind of getting run there as the feature guy for a little bit. Oh man, remember C.J. Anderson? What a player! It's sort of been one guy within chapters of a season. Like, and I feel like the last few years, it's like Akers, even when he's been great, he had like a chapter at the end of his rookie season where Henderson was kind of the guy to start. And then last year, you know, Akers gets hurt, Henderson's the guy, but then, you know, he wasn't exclusively the guy because he got hurt. And then, you know, Akers. And so maybe it's all just an injury creation, but I also think that sometimes you can have a committee within games, and sometimes you can have a committee within seasons. And I feel like the Rams are at a point now where they're having a committee within the season, which is truly actually worse for fantasy. I think over the course of the season, it can be very problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know when to stay away. But yeah, that's where I'm at with the Rams. I just again, Akers, I am rooting for him. Seems like a good dude and really fun player, but where he's going in drafts is total dead zone to me.
Yeah, just going from 30th to 35th overall, which is the range where Akers is. 30th, T. Higgins, much rather have him. 31st, James Conner, you just mentioned him, would much rather have him. I've got him like a couple of tiers ahead of Cam Akers. 33rd, Kyle Pitts, would much rather have him. Even Patrick Mahomes, like I think I'd probably rather take him. And Michael Pittman at 35th overall, 100%.
What about ETN? We go ETN or Akers?
And again, ETN, by the way, is 44th overall in consensus ADP, whereas Akers is 32nd. I'd rather have Travis ETN.
I would too. Yep. That's why I brought him up, because he's a guy who I think, I don't think his injury is one of those that lingers for years and years and years. I hope not anyway. And he's getting all the run in Jacksonville. He's got the pass catching. And
the guy he's sharing the backfield with has the Achilles injury that we're talking about with Cam Akers and James Robinson. And there's a difference between you've come back to play and you've come back effectively, I think, is the problem.
Totally correct.
All right, so other Rams topics here. Let's stick on the receivers. Do you have Kupp or Justin Jefferson first overall among receivers?
Kupp, but I go back and forth. I mean, I've been writing about player props on Yahoo, and I got the Kupp, and you looked at the total for him, and it's about 1450, I think, is his total, which seems ridiculous until you realize that's 2/3 of what he did last year. He could literally cut off 1/3 of his production from last year and have 1450 yards. I've railed about this, and I'm going to continue to rail about it. People who just say regression and drop the mic, you're doing it wrong. Cooper Kupp is going to regress. Yes, he is not going to have 2,250 yards counting playoffs again. That's not going to happen in our lifetime probably again. But what does he regress to? He had 1,947, I believe, yards last year. Does that regress to 1,600? What, you're telling me that a 1,600-yard receiver is no good? Like, really? You're going to pass on that? So if you're just like down on Kupp for any reason at all by saying regression, you're just doing this wrong. I mean, there's a few the regression police have gotten to James Conner too. He won't have as many touchdowns. Well, yeah, no kidding. He won't have as many touchdowns. He's still probably about 12. Enough for me. I understand the reasons you'd want Jefferson ahead of Kupp, but I do think it's a little bit of shiny new toy syndrome, and we're trying to force something that's not there. When Cooper Kupp, he had one game last year of less than 92 yards.
Absurd.
Think about that.
Absurd.
One game of less than 90, and it was like 60. It's like, okay. Like this, he had one of the greatest seasons in NFL history. And I don't mean greatest seasons for a receiver either. He had one of the greatest seasons in NFL history. He's at a prime age. Stafford loves him. Stafford's elbow probably worries me more than anything about Cooper Kupp. But I don't even think Stafford's elbow is now getting a little bit overblown. I actually drafted Stafford when he fell like a rock in one of my drafts. I think Cooper Kupp is locked and set it and forget it. You're fine. No regret. I would, if somebody took Cooper Kupp number one overall, I wouldn't even have that big of a problem with it.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. How about Allen Robinson, 54th overall, wide receiver 21 ADP. He's obviously, you talk about helium guy.
Right.
He's come up a lot from where he was when like best ball drafts opened. But I think he's even wide receiver 21. I've got him ranked at wide receiver 17. Like I'm higher on that ADP. I still think he's undervalued. And look, everybody knows I'm in the bag for Allen Robinson. I've been in the bag for Allen Robinson for years. But man, I mean, the notion that he was bad as an individual player last year, I don't think is truly correct. There was obviously he was played below his expectations. Normally there was certainly some stuff going on there off the, you know, with the front office. We know that probably didn't want to be with the Bears anymore. We know that wasn't as great on contested catches as he was last year. If my team wasn't giving me a long-term contract, I wouldn't want to sacrifice my body for Justin Fields hospital balls either. But I think Robinson's still right in the prime of his career, great player, and walking into like an impossible to fail situation here as the Rams wide receiver too.
I think he's going to be great. I think he's got, he's going to be, look, Robert Woods was a viable guy till he got hurt. Like, I mean, he wasn't like, I screwed up the Kupp Woods thing last year. I really did. But Woods was still fine. Like he was, and Robinson's a better player. Like he's just
straight up.
But the problem I'm having, like you said, he's guys like you. Thanks a lot, Matt. Talk this guy up so much. I can't get him anymore. He's going like, you know, I'm usually in a fourth when I'm making a decision and I'm like, maybe Allen Robinson slips to the fifth. And then as soon as I draft another receiver there, Allen Robinson goes with the next pick. I go, okay, well, what can I do? Like, I got a little bit of him early in the best ball season, but none anymore because there does come a point where somebody loves Allen Robinson more than me, and there's other receivers in that range that I'm just taking over him. But I could see Allen Robinson smashing even his ADP, and of course, if Kupp ever goes down,
right, he's going
to
go crazy.
Oh my goodness, it's off to the races with Allen Robinson. So. You've really screwed up Allen Robinson for me. So thanks a lot for that. I appreciate it.
Sorry, pal. But I mean, I'll still say, like, the guys in consensus ADP, two spots ahead of him, Brandon Cooks, Marquise Brown, 100% give me Allen Robinson over those guys. You know, Jerry Jeudy, Gabe Davis, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin.
Go ahead of that, because I've seen, like, I get that, but in a draft I've done lately,
I'll tell you, I've got him at wide receiver 17. The players that I have him just ahead of him are wide receiver 14, Terry McLaurin, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. Then I've got Allen Robinson, Deontay Johnson at 18, and then Cortland Sutton at 19.
Right. And see, I'm seeing him go. I just look at one of the best balls I'm doing. I'm seeing basically the same grouping as McLaurin, Mike Williams, Cortland Sutton. And I honestly like all three of those guys better than him. DJ Moore, too. I think DJ Moore is a little bit higher.
100%, yeah, me too.
But I just took Mike Williams over Allen Robinson. Am I dumb? Like, because I see Mike Williams, I think, as you've talked about, Keenan's dropping. Like, he's not bad by any means, but Keenan Allen's regressing a little bit. I think Mike Williams takes over as a true number one there with a great, great quarterback this year.
Yeah,
I'm aggressively drafting Mike Williams, and I draft, that's usually the decision I have in the fourth round. If I draft Mike Williams there or McLaurin, or, you know, even if something crazy happens like DJ Moore drops there, then I'm missing out on Allen Robinson. But I take those guys ahead of Allen Robinson as much as I do like A-Rob.
All right. I could sit here and talk Allen Robinson for another 2 hours, but let's move to the last team we have to preview here, the Kansas City Chiefs. Great, great, great move stacking like the two of the best offenses, two of the best fantasy teams on one preview episode here. Let's start with the boring part, I guess, the CEH discussion of this whole thing. CEH has kind of moved, at least for me in my rankings, from a post-dead zone running back to sort of firmly in the running back dead zone. I've got him at running back 21. I think the news that Ronald Jones has been, like, completely pushed aside is good news for CEH, because I don't think Pacheco, who's a fine late-round dart throw, whatever. I don't know if you think more than that, but I think he's like a fine late round dart throw. McKinnon's not a guy that's going to really, you know, mess this up too much, except on passing downs.
We'll get to that.
Okay. All right. No, let's talk about it. Cause I think
late,
like,
last year, who was the guy? Who it was the McKinnon. Guy that he retrusted late last year? It was Jerick McKinnon. When Jerick McKinnon's healthy, he's a good player. He really is. Yeah. Like, he's a guy, and he's free. He is right there. Like, I can go outside my door right now and get Jerick McKinnon. Come on in, Jerick. He's right there. Nobody's taking Jerick McKinnon yet. Andy Reid tells us his usage last year, he was a big part of that Chiefs offense. And let's say CEH gets off to another slow start, because I don't think he's a very good player. Again, betting on good players. I don't think CEH is a good player. Maybe it was like, what did he have last year? It was appendectomy. It was something last year.
Gallbladder.
Yeah. So maybe that screwed him up. He comes back, plays great this year. There's a range of outcomes where CEH is a very good fantasy pick. I get that. I'm not going to take him. But if people who do, I don't laugh at him or anything. But I do wonder if he gets off to another slow start. I don't think it's Isaiah Pacheco. He's the shiny new toy. Everybody's always like, oh, Isaiah Pacheco. And maybe, I don't hate him as a late round, but he's not late round anymore. I've seen him go crazy prices lately.
Yeah, single digits. Nuts.
So I'm pivoting to Jerick McKinnon because he's legitimately free. If I have a deep enough bench, I could stick him on there. And maybe by week 3-4, we can get a few weeks out of Jerick McKinnon when he's healthy in a great offense as a very good pass catcher. I'm coming around to McKinnon as a value pick.
I love that call because it's obviously against the grain right now with with Isaiah Pacheco really rising up. And at the end of the day, CEH is not like making your fantasy season. In a best case scenario, he's maybe RB15, maybe. I think
it's hard for me to get him above that. Like, even that's in that offense. Yeah, if it hasn't happened, God, they could have taken Jonathan Taylor. Yeah, you didn't watch any of that Wisconsin film, Andy? Come on. I agree that CH is he's a fine pick. I get every reason why somebody would pick him. I won't do it, really, unless he falls to me. It wouldn't be a proactive pick. I'm not riding this Pacheco train. Hey, look, he could end up being a superstar. I don't know. But he's just kind of gotten out of hand a little bit with the buzz. And I'm not saying Jerick McKinnon is one of my pet players or anything, but last round of my draft, if it's a deep draft, sure, I'll take a dart throw there.
Love it. Yeah, no, I think that's kind of exactly how I feel about the backfield. I don't think any of these guys are, as you say, like proactive picks. Like, the, yeah, I'm definitely going after these guys at any point. CEH's got to fall to the right spot, that's for sure. Let's talk the receivers, man. This has been an interesting group. I'll tell you how I view it, and you can tell me if you disagree. I think Juju's still undervalued. I would take him, you know, top, like fringe top 24 wide receiver. I think he has a really high ceiling in his range of outcomes if things go right. Because he's a great zone beating receiver. He's going to play that sort of, you know, flanker, big slot role. We love, that's the role he needs to play in. And then I think MVS is going to be better in real life than in fantasy, but he's going to be important to like lift the lid and stretch out the defense. Don't really care about Mecole Hardman. I think Sky Moore is like, maybe like this year's Amon-Ra St. Brown, where you don't really want to be the one that drafts him, because he'll probably get dropped in the first few weeks when he's not run a lot of routes. But then like second half of the season, I could really see him being the guy who takes over the true number one receiver role in this offense.
I think I'm a little higher on MVS than you. I think he can be. I mean, I fall victim to this too often where I look at contracts. And we've talked about this. MVS got 3 years, $30 million. Juju got 1 year, $3.25 million. That tells you what the Kansas City Chiefs think about these two guys. And I get it. We've talked about this where there's a lot of fake money in MVS and all that kind of stuff. I get that. But that was a statement that at least, like, we're, what, Juju goes seven rounds higher than MVS, maybe six,
yep,
in that range. Like, I mean, it's a huge difference in ADP, whereas I don't necessarily think MVS is that much behind Juju. I've come around to Juju. I look, Patrick Mahomes is a magician. He's going to get him the ball. He's going to have a lot of catches, a lot of yards, a lot of touchdowns. He's going to resurrect his career. No doubt about that. I get it. But I do think MVS is a little undervalued, and especially best ball, because he's going to have some really nice spike weeks. Yeah, Mecole is totally dust to me. I will not draft Mecole at any point. Like, I just, it hasn't happened. It's not going to happen. Like, it's just not. Like, they've already let us know what they think of him. Sky Moore is a guy, like you said, yeah, maybe mid-season waiver wire, keep an eye on his usage or whatever. But yeah, that's kind of, we see the receiver room very similar. I probably just have MVS a little higher than you, I think.
Yeah. Fair enough. I mean, the weeks where MVS has big games, he's probably winning you that week. So absolutely, correct, for best ball, love to draft
him. Oh, he's going to have some 143 yards, two touchdowns. Yeah, yeah. He's going to have a few of those games.
He's a one-trick pony, but that one trick is pretty damn cool, yeah, right? You know,
and especially with that quarterback.
Exactly.
That quarterback, yeah, who likes to unleash it. Yeah. Where are you at on Mahomes? Have you dropped Mahomes? Like, I have Mahomes about four. I do have Herbert and Lamar ahead of him. And it seems a little weird to have Mahomes even at four because he's so consistent.
I got him at three, and I've got Allen and Lamar Jackson ahead of him. But I do have him the top.
So you take him over Herbert. That's interesting.
Yeah, I think so, because I don't think the weapons on this offense are that bad. And I also think this idea that, like, that the Chiefs have to reinvent themselves. Like, I think they already kind of started to reinvent themselves last year, right? You know, Tyreek Hill, his yards per target, or his average depth of target, was pretty well dialed back. They had already started to kind of figure out how to work against zone coverage. They like puked all over their shoes in the second half against the Bengals in the playoffs. But I think they've already kind of successfully figured out this identity shift. And I don't know, this is a little bit narrative-y, man, but like, I just think Patrick Mahomes wants to come out here and, like, you know, Tyreek Hill's done all this talking and you know, blah, blah, blah.
Two is more accurate. Wow.
Two is more accurate. They're Tyreek, the same quarterback, but like, and, you know, Mahomes is not, like, publicly fed into that quite in the same way. I think he just wants to come out here and, like, have a smash season. And he's just – I think he's the best quarterback in the NFL still. I mean, Herbert might be second. I think I'd still take Josh Allen a little bit ahead of Justin Herbert, even though I love Justin Herbert. But I just think, like, best quarterback in the NFL, pretty good weapon still, good proven offensive system. I'm still ahead of – I'm still got Mahomes ahead of Herbert for those reasons.
Yeah, and I get it. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't spend the next hour arguing Herbert versus Mahomes, because it's steak versus steak, right? Like,
right.
Do you like the filet or do you like the ribeye? I mean,
I was literally just going to say that, Frank.
So, it's if you draft Mahomes, if you draft Herbert, you're going to get a set and forget quarterback one.
As long as you're cooking a medium rare. And then we'll be fine.
I sometimes get the medium. I don't know. I've read some things. Anyway, where are you at on Kelce?
Another podcast.
I think Kelce is very – Kelce is a guy I'm kind of aggressively avoiding because, again, I've used a stat with – at least with somebody, I think it was you. Two tight ends in NFL history at age 33 or older have had 1,000-yard seasons. One was Pete Retzlaff for the Eagles in the 60s, One was Tony Gonzalez with the Falcons. That's the list. Two guys at 102 seasons of NFL football at tight end have had 1,000-yard seasons after age 33. I'm not saying Kelce won't have 1,000 yards. He almost has to, just based on the volume. But if he drops just a little bit, he's not worth that. You got drafted probably first round, and pretty much every draft I'm in, he's a first rounder. And I just can't. I just won't do it with Kelce.
13th overall consensus ADP, clear cut tight end one. Not to me though. I've got Mark Andrews ahead of Travis Kelce.
So you're kind of with me on this one. Okay.
Yeah, Dalton.
Because if you have Andrews ahead of Kelce, you're never getting Kelce.
Exactly.
It's never gonna happen. Yeah. I love Kelce as a player, and I love the opportunity. And he could. I think the record for targets in a season is Zach Ertz with 150, and Kelce could smash that. I mean, because why wouldn't Patrick Mahomes load him up? But Hayden Winks over at Underdog. He's talked about how the playing time for Kelce is kind of dropping a little bit. And I could see he has talked about, I think I get on board with this, of maybe they're going to save him a little bit. Like, they know he's 33. Is he going to be a 98% snap guy in a regular season? I don't know. Maybe because the AFC West is so tough, but I could at least see paths where Kelce's good but not great, and he needs to be great to have that 13 ADP payoff.
100%, yeah. Like, if I'm going to rank him at tight end two, I'm already saying like he could finish at tight end two. I don't want to take him in the first round. Pretty much like that's the take right there. And yeah, he's 33. I think he'll get the targets. I think he'll get over 1,000 yards. Like you said, Tony Gonzalez is one of those guys. Travis Kelce's probably, in Tony Gonzalez's range in terms of all time.
Yeah. Dude. Kelce's great. Don't get me wrong. Kelce's going to get 1,000 yards. He's going to have a good season. Like you said, he could be tight end two. Okay. That's phenomenal. That's a great season. He's not going to pay off at your ADP though.
Exactly. Yeah. And he is the one proven commodity, like with chemistry with Patrick Mahomes in this offense. So that does say something, but I do think he's a slightly declining. He's 33. He's a slightly declining player. I think that's fair to say. He's not as fast as he used to be. His numbers against man coverage have declined, from a yards per route run standpoint. I don't always agree that that's like reflective on the player, whatever, but it would make sense that they can't really have him be like a wide receiver type of tight end. And he's just more of, right. He's going to beat more
and
zone.
It's not Kelce's bad. I'd have to draft Kelce ahead of Stephon Diggs.
And I'm not doing that.
I just can't. I'll draft Stephon Diggs and go get David Njoku an hour and a half later,
Yeah, 100% agree. All right, Frank, that is going to do it for us. I feel like we talked about an absolute ton of players on this show, so this was a meaty one. A lot of stuff
loved
we covered
it.
We went all the way from Isaiah Likely at the beginning to Travis Kelce, at the end.
We'll end up talking about, we'll get through all the John Mackey. We'll just keep going. We'll just talk through all the tight ends in history. We'll go.
Oh my god, what a show that would be. But we'll save that for a different podcast. That is going to do it for us today. Please make sure you're following Frank on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Harmon_BYB, and of course while you're there, give a follow to our social team at Yahoo Fantasy. Leave us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That would be super helpful to all of us. That's gonna be how me and Frank get to that $8 million salary, our old friend Charles Robinson. Yeah, there,
I'm gonna get that Kirk contract, man.
Let's go, baby. All right, I'll be back on Monday with Scott Pienowski. We're gonna do our usual preseason roundup and preview. Oh, the 2022 Cowboys. A lot of doom and gloom going on with the 2022 Cowboys. So we will see you then. Until then, we're out.